Hi, welcome to Networking for Herbalists with Benjamin Zappin. We're looking forward to Benjamin sharing his ideas with us. There is a little question box, and you can feel free to type in questions as you have them as we go along. And at the end of the presentation, we'll have a question and answer session, and we might even take some questions during the middle of the presentation. So thank you for joining us tonight, Benjamin. Take it away.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. Welcome. So my name is Benjamin Zappin, and I am a practicing herbalist out of Oakland, California. And for a long time, I was practicing in Santa Cruz, California. So I'm a Bay Area, California herbalist. I practice a mixture of both Chinese and Western herbal medicine. And my inspiration for offering this course to everybody is one, because it's a topic I'm really excited about. It's something I enjoy doing a lot. And it's also something that I think herbalists typically are definitely not groomed to do, and oftentimes don't know where to start. So it's something that I believe as a service I can offer some of my experience in, and hopefully zeal for can also be transmitted to you, so you have some direction and a foundation for going out into your communities, going out and working with other healthcare practitioners, working with other herbalists, working with people who know nothing about herbal medicine or healthcare, and exposing them to what you do comfortably with a sound foundation, and how you're communicating about this. Because it is very useful and is important. So the basic outline of how I want to organize this course, let's see. So the overview of this class, we want to look at networking with other herbalists, the value of that, networking with American Herbalist Guild as a entity. I was not asked to plug the guild, but I want to because I think it's really valuable, and they're hosting me here. So I want anybody who's not an active guild member to understand the value that it has for you, because I think a lot of people go to guild conferences and aren't quite sure what that value is. So networking with non-herbalist healthcare professionals and organizations, networking with non-healthcare related networking organizations, how to use these to your advantage, and the intersection of that and networking within your community. What I am aiming to do is create a foundation here, and my conversation with the Guild has been that possibly over the next few months, what we'll do is maybe have one session a month where we go more deeply into one of these particular sets of strategies for, so what are we networking for? I recognize that there are guild membership, I think, is maybe 80% students and 20% active practitioners. So we want to foment people's comfort and confidence with going out and reaching out for referrals and relationships to build their active clinical practice, both when people are really feeling like that's where they want to go, when they're already doing that and trying to make that a bigger part of their vocation and or livelihood. But also for students who are asking themselves, how do I get more experience as an herbalist? How do I gain these skills? And, you can't gain the skills of a clinical herbalist without doing them. And recognize that there's not clinical training programs in every city, every part of the country, and that a lot of herbalists are learning on the job, which is great. So I want to support people in creatively thinking about how they might broaden their outreach, and I'm going to introduce some methodologies, and I'm going to introduce a lot of examples from the networking that I've been doing recently, and made some big lists of how I've been communicating with different communities, different healthcare practitioners, and they're all big conversations, and I hope people will stick around long enough to hear some of the both useful and, you know, entertaining vignettes that I have to share with this. My background, or my contemporary expression as an herbalist is pretty dynamic. I work both as an acupuncturist and herbalist. Have a clinical practice in San Francisco, California, and in Oakland. So I'm doing outreach for that. My wife and I also own and operate a herbal pharmacy catering to different professionals where we stock bulk herbs and extracts for compounding, as well as some products. But the emphasis really is on compoundable herbs that are accessible to the community, community herbalists, naturopathic doctors, medical doctors, Chinese medical professionals are all using our services. And, you know, we just opened this a few months ago. It's called Five Flavors Herbs. So I've been doing a lot of outreach to the community that is really exciting for me. And translated to, I get to be the guy who schmoozes about the business. So I'm getting a lot of experience with this, and it's giving me a lot of extra inspiration about how I and we, and that's we, you on the other end of this webinar, can outreach and serve people with herbs and, you know, influence their health, well-being, quality of life, et cetera. So we'll get to that. There's more to what I'm doing, but I want to focus on this material. There's more to why I'm networking. So we'll get to some of that. Another full disclosure here that I told Stephen was that my wife had a baby a little over a week ago, and the complexity of my PowerPoint will reflect that. I overestimated my time for productivity, and I'm going to complete these notes soon, and they'll be attractive and more entertaining. And those can be posted with the recording, so you can follow along with that. But I have some extensive notes that aren't in the PowerPoint yet. So, you know, networking within American Herbalist Guild and with other herbalists is really an opportunity to meet other practitioners, develop relationships. I first started going to guild events in 1995 when I was studying in Santa Cruz. And I had a really great opportunity to come up in a community with a lot of prominent practitioners, teachers, who are still part of my network. They're still part of my herbal community. They're my, you know, they're the Santa Cruz Herb Mafia. They're my herbal tribe. And there's still people with whom I network and try to create opportunities for each other. We'll get into some of the language of networking in a bit, but essentially what we're looking at is building a web of relationships to enable each other opportunities to pursue our craft. And, you know, the varieties of expression, you know, are as educators and as, you know, published authors, as formulators, as salespeople, and as clinical practitioners. All these different roles are really important, and understanding the importance of all these different roles within the herbal community, I think, can strengthen how we support each other's objectives. Quality control, farmers, wildcrafters, you know, they're all really valuable parts of our community, and the guild is one place of many. You know, there's a lot of regional organizations. The herbal movement is really hot right now, and I think that herbal culture is, you know, on fire in a way that it hasn't been. You know, so I'm excited to be part of that. I'm excited to observe that. Obviously, a really big place where herbal community exists is online, and online networking is a huge part of, you know, the herbal movement or the herbal culture right now. That is what I will leave to other people to talk about. I'm not going to talk about social networking websites or ways to utilize those to grow your practice or community. I really want to focus on ground level, human to human, you know, see the whites of their eyes, connections with people. So there's other forums in which people can explore that. So we want to learn about how people treat various conditions, states of imbalance, and develop ideas about how to outreach. And, you know, I can give a really great example of this for me, a vignette that, you know, people are treating much more complex situations than you may learn to treat in school. And, you know, in whatever herbal training program that you go to, there's a lot of people doing herbal training programs, you know, that are correspondents, you know, or people going to, you know, medical degree programs, but they still never get to see certain conditions. They're not checked off as having, it's not like a residency program where you have to perform 250 procedures, you know, before you can become a, you know, family doctor, something like that. You know, so we're out there in our communities and we may be the only, you know, the only person who gets to provide service to somebody with a serious medical condition. These forums, these conferences, educational opportunities provided, webinars, et cetera, are really where we have an opportunity to gain knowledge from experienced practitioners. And I recently had a case of somebody that I'd been working with for 4 years. I work with a community of seniors with HIV, and one gentleman that I work with started to develop end-stage renal disease, and you know, I had the good fortune of, you know, having classes that Eric Yarnell had done, as well as my own Chinese medical training. So Eric has some great nephrology, urology courses that you can take, and I could comb those, and I could see his protocols and share information. Now, this type of condition is something for which there's not much of a medical option. There are a lot of clinical narratives, and I know that David Winston is somebody who shared some information, say, about nettle seed, and has case studies that, you know, had exemplified the roles in herbs like lespediza and nettle seed in, you know, regenerating kidneys and potentially extending the life of functionality, those organs. There's also some literature from Chinese herbal medicine. And so, you know, I was able to come up with a protocol to offer my patient help. Now, it was a little too late. He, over the past, this is really fresh for me, so that's why I'm sharing it. This individual, he, you know, this nephrologist, he started to really take on water weight. Maybe the herbs did or did not help him stave this off for another 3 months, but, you know, his nephrologist was saying, hey, look, you know, this is what it's going to look like when you die of kidney failure if you don't go on dialysis sooner. When you study herbal medicine, you don't really think, oh, this is going to be part of my learning curve as a clinician. You don't get training on individuals making a choice to live or not. And that was the case with this, was me and some other close friends, you know, really holding counsel with this individual who has felt like doing dialysis was a death sentence. And what I was able to do was pull from the same body of herbal literature and, you know, the same courses of Eric's and say, hey, look, here's some literature supporting how combined treatment of dialysis and herbs can actually, you know, here's some case studies, here's some scientific backing for, you know, you actually being able to have a fuller life than somebody might not have. So where did I come into contact with this information? Through networking with people who live really far away. There's not community herbalists. There's not information in schools that are near me where somebody has this type of presentation, this this background, even though I have a really extensive network of practitioners near me, it wasn't somebody with this organized set of information, data, experience. So I pulled from that and really offered me an opportunity to give somebody hope and give them a different perspective. And yeah, he made a choice. He went in today and elected to get a port inserted so that he can receive dialysis and live a little longer. So, you know, there's some emotional charge for that to me because I had somebody I'm close to that I care for who was, you know, considering not living as an option for him last week and, you know, being armed, being equipped with more information about how you can benefit people's lives in a way that their Western medical practitioners may not, may influence their choices about how they choose to live. Anyways, all that came from the herbal community that I network with through the guild. So learning about more models of practice, business development, how to express your herbal craft, I'm always looking at this and always thinking about the way people are implementing their skills, the way they are choosing to counsel people or not, the way they're choosing to implement dietary protocols, physical modalities. I think gone is the era of insistence upon, I think in earlier herbal culture, you know, there was more of a alternative medicine culture that I think we see less and less, where practitioners are vehemently saying you have to come off all your drugs. This is the only way. Insert some cute quote from Edwin Shook here. You know, that type of vitriol is less in vogue. We're more cautious. So learning of models of practice for existence. For example, you know, I study with Chinese practitioners who do nothing but Chinese herbal medicine. They'll make no other recommendations about diet, and they will, you know, exclusively prescribe Chinese herbs, no lifestyle counseling. People can get that elsewhere. There's pros and cons. They really get to see what their treatment plan does and doesn't. They really get a clear sense of what herbs do and don't, which is different than the practitioner spends 3 hours with somebody, counsels them, listens to them, implements protocols for mind, body, and spirit, and integrates, you know, Western laboratory testing and symptom sign diagnosis and energetic qualities. I admire all these. I have things to learn from all these. And if you spend time communicating with other practitioners, going to forums such as a conference or some of these online webinars, you really get that lens. And you also have an opportunity to communicate about how these people do outreach and how these people structure their businesses and receive clients and develop these clinical relationships and how they maintain them. So these are reasons to be in community with other herbalists. You don't need to be an island. So these are considerations. Having a lens into different professional standards, different standards, you know, this is a big conversation, but this is something that you certainly have an opportunity to explore with other herbalist members of the guild. Finding people to mentor you after, you know, having a formal clinical practice for, you know, over a dozen years, I still really feel like I need all sorts of mentorship and guidance. And, you know, so it's never too late to really open yourself up to ask some of these questions. You don't have to engage a mentor to do that. You can develop relationships, and the ease with which I can reach out to more seasoned practitioners or people who just have different areas of focus by virtue of keeping extensive networks of other practitioners is really fantastic. Again, a lot of this is happening online. I happen to live in a region where, you know, I could especially say this in Santa Cruz, but you couldn't you could throw a rock without hitting another herbalist or acupuncturist. And it's not too dissimilar in the parts of the Bay Area where I am, which means that, one, people are a little more acclimated to what it is that an herbalist does, what it is that complementary practitioners do. There's also more competition. So I try to not believe in competition, even though it's real. It's real, it's useful to be aware of, but I feel like we stand to gain more by supporting each other, and it's been really true for me. The support in growing myself as a professional that I've gotten from my brothers, sisters that are in my same peer group is immeasurable. Okay, so other traditional and modern networking structures. If you look around, a lot of service organizations, fraternal orders, etc. You drive through any. I don't know if this is as common, but you drive through towns in the Midwest, and that's where my experience is, because that's where my family's from. You drive through a small town, and you see posted at the edge of town, Kiwanis, Elks, Lions Club, different fraternal orders that are active within those cities. These are, historically service organizations that are serving individuals in their community within religious structures and or, people who are post-military service structures. But they've always also served as networking organizations, where they are, or if you walk through Chinatown, you see the this and that benevolent association. These are both service organizations, and they are networking organizations to raise the quality of life, standards of living of their fellow individuals. Within any organization, there's always going to be issues of inclusivity and exclusivity. Be mindful of that. But are these still useful things to consider participating in as an herbalist? Absolutely. It might be a natural gravitation. You might have a lineage to some fraternal order that goes back multiple generations. These are great things to consider participating in. All the different things that we're talking about are also critiquable. I'm not going to spend a lot of time critiquing these. I want to expose you and expand your awareness to some of the different structures that are out there. There are corporate networking environments, also considered leads groups, where essentially you create a group of unrelated and related professionals that's not necessarily medically, explicitly a medical mixed healthcare type group, where you set up a structure, develop relationships within that structure, and purport and strive to create leads and referrals for your fellow business people. Now, I'm making an assumption. There's a conversation we're having now that implies that if you're considering this, you are in business as a practitioner. And I recognize, as I mentioned earlier, that not everybody else is ready or trying to be in business. So at a later point, I'd like to do a business-centric module of this theme, and hopefully that will be useful and interesting. I spent a lot of time when I first moved to we moved to the Bay Area from Santa Cruz because my wife started medical school at UCSF, and I had to start all over again. I had to start my clinical career all over, so. Started that in the East Bay in San Francisco and asked my fellow practitioners, what have you done to build your practice? And started participating in meaning corporate, that it's actually a corporation, the structure. I participated in one called BNI, or Business Networking International, that has guidelines and scripts for participating and networking with unrelated business people. And I'm talking that I was networking with designers, hairstylists, personal trainers, life insurance salesmen. Some things that for me, my politics and ethics and sensibilities about how the world should work may have been severely out of alignment with some of the people whose, priorities, first and foremost being accrual of wealth, which is really not my priorities. And so culture shock is a really good thing to expose yourself to. This was certainly, I participated in this particular group for 3 years, and I'm still recovering from culture shock, and I still exchange referrals with people that I develop relationships with. One of the considerations that I want to really emphasize is, if you are trying to make it as an herbalist or in any profession as a small business person, expand yourself past that next paycheck to looking at 3, 5, 10-year, 20-year building of relationships within a community and how powerful that will be once your web or your network is expanded to that point. Because, having been in the community that I'm in now for 4 years, I continue to get referrals, and I continue to actively get recommendations and referrals from people who are not, they don't know all about what I do. They built trust because I helped them, or I helped somebody they love and got results that they were looking for, and they know me to be a credible practitioner who's able to serve people. So start thinking along those lines, and if you're young in your career, that's a really great reason to, it's a great reason to do a good job, to be ethical, to start out of the gates adhering to good standards of professionalism. And it's a good reason to understand your limits and be judicious in how you practice in any given environment, because you're building a reputation. We're always building a reputation in anything that we're doing and any service we're providing. So it's an important frame of reference and important component of self-evaluation to keep when we're in these networking environments. Mixed healthcare provider groups, ones that you create and groups that just exist out there. If you live in a small town, now, there's a lot of small and versus large town considerations, and we might emphasize that in some different ways in a little bit. But if you live in a small town, developing relationships with healthcare providers that, one, allied services, people who might already have values and belief systems that are in line with yours, that, maybe as radical, more radical, slightly less radical, or, just as middle of the road as you, just as fair and balanced as you, to start exploring what you can offer the public that you serve and what the limitations of your services are. So you know who to refer to and start building rapport with other people that are offering health services, developing trust, develop a clear understanding. You can help people build an understanding of what you do in 30 seconds, but you're going to build a much deeper connection with people if you group with them, if you cluster with them, and keep exposing each other to the services that you offer. And as you build trust and as you build rapport, strive to support each other's business, strive to support each other's expression of their and your craft so that people in your community can have optimal health. This will be a big education, I assure you. Talk about some of the directions that can go. One more thing I want to back up to networking with other herbalists. when I looked at, you know, in preparation for this course, my last, you know, 6 weeks of referrals that came to me, I got at least one, if not two, referrals of people that I could serve, that, you know, people from my clinical services, at least one or two coming per week in the last 6 weeks that came from other herbalists. It came from herbalists out of state, and that, and or people in my community who were complementary healthcare providers that thought I might have a solution to their patients' problems that they don't. You know, so developing your strengths, and just because somebody has the same initials after their name, doesn't mean that they can solve all the same problems. And that really builds people that you're serving's trust. When you say, I don't think I can help you further, or I think somebody else in my same profession can help you more. It might take some humility. It might take some, you know, adjustment of your livelihood, because they're not going to be continuing to see you. But it really builds a lot of trust, and it is really a good faith gesture to, you know, release people to somebody else's care. So that's a real strong reason. The people who are in your same profession, people who have similar beliefs, you know, other people using herbs as medicine, yeah, they know what you do better than anybody that you're trying to convey that to, hopefully. And yeah, that's just a real strong encouragement to build those relationships locally. Specialization, starting to consider specialization, as I mentioned earlier. You know, it's very common for you know, people who are getting out of a medical residency program to have required to sign off on, you know, 200 of a certain procedure. You know, I keep wanting to say, and this is what I'm laying awake nervous about. We just had our second kid less than a couple weeks ago, and our joke is that, you know, I'll be my wife's first vasectomy that she signed off on. It's not really going to happen, but it's part of my sense of humor. You know, so people are signed off on having to do a certain amount of procedures before they can actually enter the profession. How many herbalists have, you know, treated 200 of any condition? You know, so I really want to encourage you to consider specialization in terms of networking. Another vignette to consider as a reference point that I'll share is I have trained myself to, or habituated myself, because it's a reflex. It's not a conscious thing that I, you know, set in my notes to do today. When I see people with a condition, I ask, are you, you know, part of a community of people with this particular condition? How can we serve more people, you know, with our herbs? Doesn't necessarily take an in-depth clinical pursuit to serve a lot more people, see results, get feedback about those results, and influence the quality of a lot more people's lives. So, you know, some examples for me are I work with a population of individuals living with HIV and AIDS. They're certainly all parts of communities that, you know, with more people with the same condition. And, you know, same diagnosis. Many of them have been, you know, were diagnosed in the mid-80s. And so if they value my services, you know, I put forth, hey, we have these protocols. I can, you know, when people are on fixed incomes, I steer them where to get things. And, you know, I have tried to educate my patient populations on how to serve their fellow patient populations and what can treat different subsets of a, you know, a issue, you know, different issues, sequela of the disease process itself, or medications, the stresses they might put on the body. So often I'm the conduit for that. You know, the more people I can serve, the better, and don't necessarily always need to be doing extended consultations. So train your mind to think, how can we outreach? I have patients who are social workers. What patient population do they work with? You know, I'm working on building bridges now that I'm hoping to get students of mine getting clinically trained. Have social workers come in to see me. Say, great, who are you serving? Oh, dual diagnosis. One works down the street from us at a dual diagnosis teams with mental health conditions and substance abuse problems. Great patient population to serve with herbal medicine. Another patient who works in the Tenderloin in San Francisco at a series of residential facilities for, you know, similarly, dual diagnosis, substance abuse, mental health, all teens with HIV. We're trying to do outreach and enable ourselves to, if nothing else, supply some teas to those groups and have that be a regular part of their development of self-care practices. And of course, you know, it might just be the social worker, depending on different institutional review kind of access parameters. You know, so these are just some ideas about how to build bridges and expand your influence that might not all be clinical. This may enable you to, it's not necessarily research, but it might enable you to take a few herbs in combination. How can you get a few herbs to 100 people or 50 people and try to track feedback on how that works? It'll definitely accelerate your learning curve. How do you develop guidelines for understanding the influence of those? That's what we're working on. I do have some experience with that, working in similar populations, so I'm motivated and inspired to reach out to these groups. So these might be things that you encourage your, if you're a teacher, encourage your teachers to do. These might be ways you influence your community. That's not necessarily profit motivated, but it's a real strong way that you can reach out, use other healthcare providers to as conduits to greater service, greater expression. So I think that gets that point across. Let's see. Oh, my slides are having issues here. Okay. PowerPoint crisis on my end. So I'll just keep moving here. I think that really gives you a sense of what existing community groups you might participate with. There's also small and big business association relationships that you can build. The best thing I ever done, part of our inspiration for opening our facility that we just opened, which is a mixture of manufacturing facility, a mixture of clinic, and a mixture of front-end herbal pharmacy, was we have an extract company that we're wanting to avoid getting caught with our pants down and having the FDA show up in our basement. So we, you know, have taken measures to be GMP compliant. And so we're looking for a space to do this in. Serendipitously found a place 10 blocks from our house that also solved the problem of how do I get closer to the community that I live in? You know, I had a really strong community in Santa Cruz, and moving to the Bay Area, it's just been a little more disparate, and that wasn't satisfying to me. So creating a shop, creating a location that we've invited other healthcare practitioners to work in, that was also a public access point, you know, to have a clinical herbal pharmacy. Having bulk herbs as tea available to the public is the lowest cost healthcare available. And it's created so much freedom for me and how I express what I do, because people can come and they can spend $2 or $3, you know, if they're on a budget or in a hurry. And you know, it tickles me pink when healthcare providers I know who are making $300 an hour for a consultation come in ask me for help and leave with a $3 tab for tea, you know, for, you know, increasing breast milk productivity, as an example. We happen to be located really close to a lot of hospitals, so we get a lot of medical professionals coming in. So creating an outpost where people can come see you, I think, is a really valuable thing to do. It creates, you know, it requires some investment, but it increases your profile, and if you do it in a professional way, people will take you more seriously than if you are, in contrast, you know, moving about doing consultations with people in cafes or in their homes. There's value to this too, and you always have to start out somewhere. A middle ground is seeing if you can get a consultation space. You know, if you are aspiring, if you're a student aspiring to do more clinical work, see if you can work out of somebody else's office. They might, you know, you're networking there. They might be comfortable directing patients to you. You might fulfill something that their service providers in that office don't provide. You might also be able to utilize space at your school to do more clinical work. So think about having a location, thinking about having a location where there's a medicinary or apothecary. I think this really speaks loudly to people who are coming to you that herbalism is a real thing. It's a real profession, you know, and having a dignified presentation of the tools that you're using adjacent to you, I think is really meaningful. So both in the eyes of other medical providers that you might network with and in the eyes of your community, it creates an easier bridge, more access to more people. And then you can also participate in neighborhood business associations. Just starting a business, you get a lot of exposure, you know, through free neighborhood business associations. So consider that, planting yourself somewhere and being a business person will just afford you, you know, instant conduits to other people that are also trying to build a business. Defining the role that you want to play as an herbalist in your community and letting people know about that. Develop different scripts that you can state in a half hour, people don't, or half a minute. You know, develop a 30-second script, develop a 5-minute script, you know, and develop a set of hour long or half hour long or 20-minute long talks that you can do to different groups and start woodshedding those, start practicing those, start finding places to go out and let people know about what you do. One of the keys for me in networking is being really clear about what it is that you have to offer, explaining to people the type of services that you have, and also not seeming too hungry and too eager. Because if you present with confidence, which I know if you're starting out as a clinician and you're starting out as a business person, it can be shaky times, and it can be nerve-wracking. So, the more that you can project confidence about what you do and not seem overly hungry for business, this will be easier for you, and it'll be easier for people to relate to you and not just see you as trying to make a buck. There's a lot of people out there that's okay. So this is really a matter of ethics too. But defining the role that you play and some of the things, you know, we're looking at the world of appearances, some of the ways that you might communicate to people may seem really far out and fringe. How many of you have stated that you're an herbalist or a clinical herbalist and just had people laugh, chuckle? I still have that happen all the time. Nervous laughter as a result of saying you're an herbalist. So getting easy about what you do. and being able to elucidate the technologies you use, the delivery systems, whether you are an evidence-based herbalist or an energetic herbalist using, you know, the vibrational qualities of herbs, or if you practice a differential diagnostic system that is based on a traditional system, some particular thread of Chinese medicine. Understanding when you're communicating with people what is too much information and what may confuse them. Understanding the laws, these are big conversations, understanding the laws about what you can communicate, about expectations, about your the legality of you being able to, within your particular licensure or certification in your state or region, communicate about expectations. You know, so you may be able to say, I can make recommendations about herbs to assist with balancing your body. California acupuncturists are primary healthcare providers, and we can talk about disease processes and make assertions that, you know, we can treat disease processes, which not having to do a semantic dance around that is a lot of freedom, you know, but there's still places in different states, and you want to know if you're in one of them where you will be quickly tracked down as practicing medicine without a license. So understanding the nuance of that and getting comfortable communicating in that way, it's another reason to network with other regional herbalists. I know the American Herbalist Guild has different regional branches. And I think this is one of the ways that we can strengthen each other's practices, to really understand the regional laws and, you know, what is safe to communicate, how is it safe to communicate, and who do you want to obscure yourself from view of, and what is the history of legal, political issues in your region. All complementary medical professions, by and large, are young. You know, they're all relatively new. So be mindful of that. So partner up, buddy up with other people in your region if you're not already really confident, and work on practicing. You could do this over the phone with other aspiring herbalists or other practicing herbalists, and get feedback on, I feel like I'm always developing this, and get feedback on, you know, how you communicate about the services you provide, how you manage expectations, how you can communicate about conditions you treat without being explicit about that is something to work on. I mentioned earlier, setting about timelines for setting goals. How many people can you get in your door? How many people can you get in front of you, whether you're just aspiring to build more experience versus generate more clients as part of your livelihood? Set goals about that. Set reasonable goals and get feedback from your cohort about how to set those goals. I think that's really important, so that you can ostensibly, if you're trying to be a professional herbalist, you're also working on a business plan, that indicates which slice of your livelihood pie is going to be fulfilled by which of the subsets of herbalism or other, quote unquote day jobs you're utilizing to, keep the lights on, keep the babies fed. So consider that. Other things to consider, finding what's called golden geese. I'm always striving to find the golden geese who are perpetually laying golden eggs for us. They're perpetually bearing fruit. I'm talking about streams of referrals, individuals or subsets that are streams of referrals. And some of these, things that I feel like I work a lot with people with mental health issues and think that herbs are phenomenal in supporting people with psycho-emotional imbalances, be they more overt psychiatric conditions or subclinical maladies. I think we most, 99% of you hopefully recognize and agree with this. And so, I've gone to great lengths to find psychiatrists and psychologists, counselors, social workers who could be useful streams. And some of that I just expressed by going out and educating two groups of practitioners and or groups of people with various diagnoses, support groups, et cetera, and educate them about what herbs can do for them and how they can make choices to better their quality of life with that. And then through that, hopefully generate some streams of referrals. That works to varying degrees. I really want to encourage people to practice that. I'd like to do another module here on specifically how to go out and seek out primary care referrals, primary care referrals or referrals from specific practitioners, because it's a bigger conversation than it looks like we're going to have time for tonight. Other complementary groups, that I've networked with quite a bit, are midwives and birthing professionals that may have an allegiance to herbal medicine, are looking for safer, gentler, natural substances to serve their clients with. They may have some herbal training or not. And, for postpartum care and for treating newborns and new mothers. Now, this is a group that I've lived in communities where there are really strong midwifery practices, really strong birthing communities, and have done a lot of teaching to doulas and offering your educational services to different practitioners who might use these will always help you, I believe. It always has for me, build referral networks. There are two ways. I'll know a handful of really strong professionals that I can turn direct people to. And they will, if you present yourself in a professional way as an educator, either charging for that or doing it as service, you will generate trust, exhibit your expertise, and people will send clients to you. There's a lot of complementary alternative, on kind of simpatico, similar belief system groups out there. Other kind of surprising groups that I've developed strong kind of golden geese referral streams from and with include dentists and oral surgeons. And I developed those in part intentionally because there is a strong set of evidence base. Now this relates more to acupuncture, a strong set of evidence base, and strong practice in different parts of the world for using acupuncture for different aspects of dental health, maxillofacial health. I won't belabor what those are. A lot of them can be treated with herbs, but that being said, I'm encouraging you use that as an example to think out of the box and think, these are not typical allied professionals that are thinking about complementary alternative modalities to use. So I want you to consider that. I want to share with you, because we're not running out of time, but time is running down. I want to tell you about, in the past 6 weeks, some of the networking that I've done, excluding social media, and then, I'll share a couple of vignettes from that, and then we'll talk about the main referral streams I've seen when I look at who is sending me patients in the past 6 weeks. So in terms of networking, people I've had one-on-one meetings with, phone calls, et cetera, I have a list of about 40, just to give you a sense of how actively I've been doing this. I've been inviting a lot of people to come spend time with me, because as I mentioned, we have a location. Without talking about results too much, this list includes chiropractors, naturopathic doctors, psychiatrists, a pediatrician, multiple psychologists. I've scheduled presentations and done presentations at a local hospital. I have, as I mentioned, explored potential relationships with different social workers working on site at multiple sites, done networking with parents of autistic children. I had some, so any client who comes to see you, a really key thing to do is say, are you part of a group that is, you know, sharing information about how to best serve the people that you care for? You know, certainly parents of autistic children are a strong group of advocates for their clients, their rights, trying to find solutions. And yeah, if they're happy with your service, I generally wait till somebody has, you know, there's clear trust, there's clear rapport. We've seen some results that they're happy with. We understand the limitations and the benefits of what I have to offer. I say, are there people that you could introduce me to? Yeah, the key difference between a lead and a referral, a lead is, yeah, here's this particular venue that you might contact. You know, here's a possibility for where we might find further connection, further clients. A referral is explicitly something in which either you're being recommended, your services are being recommended to, and I'll put these in notes that we create. So your services are being recommended by a person who's satisfied or trusts you for that service. You know, or there is a introduction being made, or you're being given, you know, permission, you know, authorized permission to contact and outreach that person. You know, so those are all really valuable things to consider. Where do you know that somebody's making recommendations? I have practitioners who recommend my services all the time, and they track it for me, and I track how many people come. The strength of those referrals, and this is really important information, varies based on whether they created an introduction or not, and whether I was authorized to reach out. And I have, and I'll publish these, and I'll share these with the group, referral forms that I give to other practitioners. And if somebody checks a box that includes their phone number that says, yes, please have them call me, those are definitely people who are more interested. And what do? I follow up and call those people, and I say, you know, so-and-so, your dentist, your psychologist, psychiatrist, said that you gave your permission to contact you. If you have any questions or would like to make an appointment, contact me. It's simple as that. And then anything beyond that is sticky. But I do ask people to request permission for me to contact them. That can be really powerful. People don't like sales calls. I don't like sales calls. You don't like sales calls. So back, you know, back to that list. I'll make this really quick. I have a patient who, it's always a bad sign or a little scary to me when somebody says, you know, we do the same thing. And, you know, what we do is really similar. The first person that stands out in my mind is saying that to me is a childhood friend who sells life insurance to poor people in the greater Atlanta region. And he said, Ben, we really, our lines of work are really similar. We help people. And, you know, I've been rolling my eyes about that for 15 years. This gentleman that I work with, who's in his mid-50s, he, you know, he's a patient of mine. He says, and, you know, I really want to collaborate with you. We do similar work. I was like, what is that you do? And he's, you know, he's like, I'm a healer too. And he does a, I won't even say it because it would make this rated X, but he does, you know, a particular tantric sexual practice that I think is very extreme. And, you know, I've openness and acceptance to that. And he keeps saying, you know, Ben, I want to collaborate with you. And I'm like, geez, I don't know what that looks like. And frankly, I'm not that comfortable with it. So he tells me he's going to a conference of 400 people that practice the same kind of extreme sexual practice that don't and he's going to be teaching workshops on introducing a healing modality into that and a healing presence and consciousness. And I said, great, I see ways in which this does the body physical harm. Why don't I write up a flyer and put it on your flyer that you're going to hand out to all these people? Why don't I sponsor this and write out a menu of herbal recipes, of teas, topical preparations, enemas to heal the particular types of tissues and enable for safe practice of this particular practice. And he loved it. And what did that get of the conduit to me to potentially help minimize harm and improve the quality of life for people who are doing their bad thing there? And it also gave a opportunity for somebody who really values what I do as a clinician to communicate to hundreds of other people about what I do. What was the expense for me? What was the cost? The cost was me providing some, a few samples and spending a half hour of my time writing up these recipes. He paid for the printing. So where can you get exposure like that that's really authentic and really real? I thought that was golden networking. This conference was last week. We'll see what pans out. It's given me something to blush about for a month. I have taught classes to Chinese medical practitioners. I've hired students and other herbalists to work with and for me, and they become referral streams. We have a neighborhood pharmacist who is an independent business person, and he has become a really strong source of referrals. Meeting the local pharmacists near you who get and present to them that you communicate about herbal medicine in a logical, rational way and have some expertise in herb-drug interactions and an existing evidence base and can be a resource for people that come to them. Because they do. Pharmacists are one of the main conduits to everybody who's receiving Western, who's receiving allopathic medicine. And they are very often open-minded. So that's really take that one, consider that. I'll be really quick. Having a baby, working with midwives, going to the baby group, creating a formulary of potential remedies that a given profession may find beneficial, and sharing this with members of that profession. We've done that. We've been working on crafting formularies that just expose possibilities to birthing professionals, psychologists, psychiatrists, of that is an evidence-based formulary and a non-evidence-based formulary that we've differentiated for our herbal pharmacy. Having a booth at a farmer's market, asking patients who they might refer, hosting events that are related to conditions or not, hosting networking events in a space that you have or sponsoring networking events, just creating a community presence there. Food, kind of fun things that show and highlight herbs that are more playful, sensual, culinary, etc., that get people excited and get people recognizing that these are plants that you're using for healing. So many people are, quote-unquote, UPS herbalists, not United Plant Savers, but United Postal Service. Everything comes in a box, in a package, lots of packaging. I see a lot of natural healthcare practitioners in my community that really are not connected to plants, although their belief system, their values, ethics are that they want to use natural substances. So helping be a bridge between the people in your community and the natural world, I think, is so important. Doing herb walks for free or for cost, it's huge. Using other business services and learn about what they do while over that time, letting them know about what you do and that you're also open for business, really participating in an exchange with other professionals, referring to them and or using their services so that you get to spend that intimate time people like it when you direct business their way. They will value you, and they will, it can either be tacit or unstated, but there's a certain amount of spoken and unspoken trust that's gained when you're giving your dollar to other people. And this plays itself out in different ways in small towns and large towns. So that's a larger conversation. I want to share with you where my where my referral base has been coming from in the past, say 6 weeks that I looked at new patients. Given some of these are more thorough intakes with a treatment plan and the larger consultation, some of them are people that I spent 10-15 minutes with, and some of the people that you spend 10 minutes with get great results, and some people are slower to progress who you spend more time with. So that's a strong recommendation. I hear people on the education circuit saying, you're doing people a disservice if you don't treat mind, body, and spirit and do a 2 to 3 hour intake. And that, and that is a particular model of practicing. I value that. I value those educators. I value that model. I also value the Chinese practitioner who takes pulse and tongue and does a 1 minute interview and writes a prescription and sees 100 people a day. And I hold those two concepts in balance day to day of what value can we bring about to people's lives with herbs, and how much time do we need to spend with people, because I see people for whom I really, really help them a lot, that I do nothing but a 10 question intake, pulse and tongue, and I also see people for whom getting into their story just makes things messier. So that's a favorite tangent of mine. So, here's my referral sources. So number one, biggest piece of the pie there is existing and satisfied clients. The people that you have served who have really felt your care, compassion, and seen the results of the modalities that you use and practice are going to be the people that have the greatest potential for recommending other people to you and have the greatest potential for being your golden geese, so to speak. And a really useful thing to do is, one, stay in touch with them with printed material that you mail to them, occasional phone calls, maintain those relationships. It's really appropriate. And or electronic, social media, newsletters, that type of thing. These are some of these different clusters I'm going to look at are all lumped together in that. People that I've reactivated, through newsletters, are going to be existing satisfied clients who may not be thinking about me day to day because I'm not actively in a therapeutic relationship with them. Students of mine referring family, friends, and their own patients, and students of mine vary from, people who are already professionals. I do a lot of education for Chinese medical professionals, keeping people connected to herbal practice, and I wind up getting quite a few referrals from them. And, then people who are working with us intimately at our pharmacy, interns and more formal apprentices. Local and distant colleagues that I know and don't know. Colleagues that I don't know personally, by virtue of participating in American Herbalist Guild or being an educator with some bit of visibility, it does build some credibility. And I think that's a real meaningful reason to consider aspiring to be a professional member of HG and, have that peer-reviewed identity. I don't think it's a starting point. It's not an end point. It's critiquable, but I think it's really valuable, and it certainly has been valuable to me. If other peers who are professionals can say, who's in that region, then they know that you have a certain standard of professionalism and level of experience. local colleagues have already talked about that a bit. A thing to consider, I've explored, you know, as I mentioned, exploring referral relationships from other medical providers, identifying what barriers they may be for people to legally and or ethically within the standards of their profession or comfort level or ego to make direct referrals to you. I get a lot of practitioners refer people to me for herbs, and I have to say, and you know, because I operate a pharmacy and I'm a clinician, you know, they think they can just send their people over to me for consultations and I'll take care of their patients for them. And I have to say, hey, there are limitations to which I can be the practitioner for you, both ethically and legally. You need to be sending people with, you know, essentially a prescription or knowing what they need. Otherwise, they need to be enrolled in my, you know, for liability reasons, for insurance that I carry. They need to sign some forms and be my patient if they want me thinking about their medical case. So those are considerations for you to think about. Referrals from networking activities, as I mentioned, older networking activities, people that I develop relationships with that, you know, are culturally and geographically, you know, kind of from different planets, ideologically, morally, ethically, spiritually, et cetera, you know, just from different worlds. And I think these are great people for everybody to relate to. I think it's great to get outside of your cultural bubble and see how many people really need the services that you have to provide. I know that many herbalists are, you know, ideologically entrenched in a certain way to live and don't move other than laterally, socially, you know, with people who share their belief systems and how to live. And the more that you can reach outside of that, the more you're going to be able to serve people and, you know, build bigger bridges. And I think this is an important practice for being human in general. Advocate for that. Other referral sources, practitioners who I've actively sought to network with, practitioners who hear of reputation, walk in traffic, people in search of neighborhood practitioners, or as I mentioned, through having a pharmacy, having an apothecary. I've had several people come in looking for herbs that they researched online, and had several people come in asking for, you know, kind of, it's obvious when they ask for this and that, that, you know, they think they have cancer or they have cancer. And I have to say, I don't think that's a good idea for, you know, you to take this subset of drastic, purgative, cathartic, potentially toxic herbs. Do you know what you're doing? No. Do you have cancer? I don't know. You know, then we go through a whole process, and several people are entrusted to my care and practice who've arrived because, one, I was honest, and two, ethical, and three, had some knowledge that I was protecting them with. I've mentioned people with similar illnesses to existing patients. I've seen that be a stream of referrals. And then newsletters and, you know, kind of promotions being a new set of businesses outreaching to our community has definitely, you know, generated some interest. You know, we sent out 2,000 newsletters to Chinese medical practitioners in Northern California, and, you know, got a list. And, you know, casting big nets is a recommendation. How can you cast a big net and see what comes in with that? And how can you do that, as I mentioned earlier, on a dime? And then how can you include that in part of your advertising budget? If you find ways to track where these referrals come from, you know, include that on an intake form. Thank people who are referring people to you. Let me reiterate that. Thank people who are referring people to you, and that will help strengthen that relationship and ensure continuation of that practice. developing relationships in which you are requesting introductions and or, as I mentioned, creating a document that gives people permission to do that. So that's a lot of information about how I do my thing. I may not have gone as in-depth. I wasn't sure how much time I'd have. May not have gone as in-depth with some of the things that purported objectives of this course. And you saw my PowerPoint crumbled to dust there. But I'm going to include some templates and some methods. We'll get those uploaded in the next few days to the website, make them available for you. Feel free to, you could email me personally if you'd like to make sure to get on a list of people who want that at benzappen@gmail.com. I will use this as an opportunity to feel comfortable saying, please, if you know anybody in the Bay Area who is in need of herbal services, let me be a resource, a potential practitioner or guide to the appropriate person who might be able to serve their best interests, and stay connected with me and our entity through fiveflavorsherbs.com. We do on-site education, so I hope if you're in the Bay Area, you will come visit for education, just to say hi, share tea, introduce yourselves to us. We're very interested in serving the needs of herbalists in a variety of ways. Stephen, I know that you're going to open things up to questions.
Yeah, we haven't had a lot of questions get typed in. Someone did ask you to repeat your contact information, though, that people can get that again, how they get a hold of you.
So feel free, and I can type that in if that helps people see it. Ben Zappen. @gmail.com. So that is benzappen@gmail.com. I'm typing that in.
Okay.
I can make sure that everybody sees that, Stephen. And then
that went to the organizer. That went to the organizer panels. So only let me put it to everybody.
Okay. Can you do that?
I can.
It doesn't look like I can send chat to everyone.
Yeah. That.
Can you forward that?
Yeah, I just sent that to everybody, so that it's in the chat box. There, somebody says they. You just faded out for a second.
Okay. So if you could forward along also my own clinical website, it's benzappen.com.
Benzappen.com is the website. Okay. All right.
So there's two websites. One's my practice. One's our Center Pharmacy Extract Company, and we also offer education. So,
okay. Someone asked if this is being recorded and will it be available to listen to again. It is being recorded. It will be posted on the AHG website. I'm hoping, since they made it open to the general public, that they will be posting it on the website for the general public. Most of the webinars that we do are put into the member area for AHG members to access later, but we'll talk to Mimi and make sure that this gets it. Now we're getting some questions putting in. Okay.
So before I answer any of those, just another thing that I want to reiterate is, if people could express to me and or to the AHG directly, to express their level of interest in having a monthly meetup online group dedicated to different subcomponents of how to strengthen your networking activities, how to strengthen your referral sources, how to strengthen your expression of herbalism. That's something I'd love to do as a service to our kind of umbrella of a profession. Mm-hmm. But it would help me know how much interest there is out there.
Okay. Let's see. Someone says, don't have a question, but the information was definitely very helpful. I'm a student herbalist at the moment. Do you have any suggestions about timeline? How long should you expect to take in getting a new business off the ground?
Woo!
That's a loaded question.
Well, it depends on what your aspirations for, you know, your livelihood are. Yeah, and you have to weigh that. I mean, that's a big consideration, what your expectations of performance of that new business are. I've started and run varying degrees of successful new businesses over the past dozen years, and, you know, one, I've learned how hard you have to work. Two, really have a good sense of that timeline, and am a strong advocate of keeping your day job and not just going into debt to start something new. But, you know, a couple years is a very common recommendation that people quote. You know, expect that it will take a couple years, and create a timeline based on that as a realistic timeline. And if you fulfill your objective sooner, that's great. You know, so incrementally building a practice while you have some other livelihood so you don't panic, you know, is a strong recommendation. If you can have a livelihood that includes other areas of herbal medicine, that's great. You know, if you can branch out. Most herbalists I know are multitasking. And, you know, my livelihood still includes, you know, working as a chef at herbal events, which I love, and, you know, wildcrafting. And I still peel bark. And, you know, there's, you know, the hats I wear are really dynamic. Would I be, you know, so I might not be the best person to ask because I run five different businesses all under a couple umbrellas. So question, ask that, you know, survey, ask that question to as many people as possible.
Well, I run three and I've had four. which by the way leads into this question. How do you do everything and have a balanced life?
You know, it depends on whether you consider coffee as part of a balanced life.
See, no. Someone asks, how many employees and interns do you have helping you?
Yeah, it depends on how many employees and interns, and, you know, there's a lot of horse and cart stuff. I wouldn't say I'm leading the quality of balanced life that I want. And I get a pretty good night's sleep every night. Yeah, is if you make herbalism your lifestyle, is something that I've joyfully acquiesced to. Yeah, it's who I am. It's what I'm doing in and out of my sleep, and all these different things bring me joy. Yeah, so my family is involved in it. My children are around when I'm practicing these various aspects of my career. You know, so I enjoy the other, you know, my social life is interwoven with other people who I work with. And I get a lot of social fulfillment out of serving people clinically and working with and teaching groups and being a community outlet. You know, so, you know, as I mentioned, I've not been more fulfilled as a community participant more than since we opened a shop. So, that's, you know, there's layers to what is a balanced life for me, and that's part of it. I'm not meditating 6 hours a day.
You know, but, no, but they did also ask, how many employees or interns do you actually have helping you?
We have three part-time employees, and my brother-in-law is a partner in our business, and, you know, so he's putting some sweat equity in, and he and I are both overtime, you know, overtime sweat equity, and, you know, shoveling every dime we make into the furnace. It's really, and my wife is also very actively involved, although she's slowed down since she had the baby, barely, sort of. But she was putting 20 hours a week and raising our son into the business while in medical school. So, you know, that's been ongoing. And she still looks great. And so interns, we're kind of getting to that point where we're going to have more interns, and that's finding interns something to do rather than having interns sap your energy with lots of questions is always a trick.
So, did you pursue your acupuncture first, or did you begin with your herbalism first?
I pursued my herbalism first. It was kind of an accident. I was in the right place in the right time in Santa Cruz. Michael Tier and Christopher Hobbs were running a school, and somebody I knew took a course with them. Somebody I was living with took a course with them and was bringing herbs home, and it's like, oh, I'll check this out, and was already studying the native flora and already in love with the native flora. I was 19, 20, and went to the introductory session and fell in love with herbs, and within 6 months was apprenticing with my dear friend and business partner in another business in Sylvan Institute of Botanical Medicine, Thomas Avery Guerin, running his apothecary with him and doing wildcrafting and medicine making and serving local practitioners. So I've been doing what I do now my entire adult life. And then I had the opportunity to start acupuncture in California. You can get licensed as a tutorial student or as an apprentice. And I did a 4-year apprenticeship with Michael Tierra starting when I was 23 or 24. And what a wonderful opportunity. So I still cite all those individuals as part of my network. They've all been extremely generous in supplying me with opportunities and continue to try to create opportunities for expression and livelihood. Especially those two men, Michael Tier and Thomas Guerin, are really people that are beloveds that I'm still close with. And I'm still really inspired by their level of generosity and fellowship with fellow herbalists, and just aim to carry that forth. I've continue to receive and enjoy that with a lot of other herbalists. So
there are a couple questions here I just want to answer quickly. How many hours for mentoring are needed to join the AHG, and about do you have to have an entrance exam? There's a professional application for the American Herbalist Guild on their website, and you can go and download it and read all the requirements. And there's also a webinar that we recorded about how to go about making professional application to the American Herbalist Guild. So that's your best resource to get information on that.
And I can speak to that a bit, Stephen, that I'm working right now with some other members of the mentorship committee and looking at how to create bridges between potential mentors and people desiring a mentorship or mentees, and hoping to create ways to connect people up better, and specifically create a time to focus on that at the upcoming Guild conference in November. And also looking at how to build bridges between mentorship and the existing schools, and looking at different curriculum, and looking at specifically clinical curriculum and how prepared people are coming out of different programs, and how to create more opportunities for structured clinical guidance that are out there. Because there's nothing like a residency out there for herbalists, and we're trying to identify some of the gaps so people aren't just on an island in their communities remotely trying to fulfill these potentially daunting requirements without some guidance and support.
Which also is another comment I want to make about somebody asking about, is it mandatory to be certified or licensed? And the answer is there is no licensure for herbalists in the United States. There's licensure for acupuncturists and naturopaths in some states, but not for herbalists. And it's not mandatory to be certified to be an herbalist, which also leads into another question about people asking about, it's difficult to find information on legalities, and can you recommend any resources for them to learn more about the legalities of, being an herbalist? That's actually a webinar I think I ought to do. go ahead.
I was going to suggest the regional branches of the Guild, would be a good starting point to reach out to. And then also looking at who is practicing in any given state, and seeing what length they went to. So looking for somebody in your state that is practicing as an herbalist and talking to them about what they've gone through. Like I know, my friend Nicola Schnell is a really successful herbalist in Omaha, Nebraska. And he went and got a nutritionist certificate license so he could legally practice where he grew up. And I mean, I think he was genuinely interested in providing quality nutritional guidance and counseling, but I think in, you know, his real heart is as an herbalist and expressing different forms of herbalism. And he's outstanding and brilliant. Somebody I respect a lot who's made a really successful business as a practitioner. Somebody like that in your state who has chosen different professional tracks to combine, I think it's recommended to work with another professional structure in which you have the freedom to express herbal medicine, but also may have more local recognition or legality, you know, such as clinical nutrition or body work or some other physical modality or counseling modality that has recognition and may give you other freedoms. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, and they mentioned about Canada. I don't think there's any licensing for herbalists in Canada either. But there are 14 states that have passed health freedom bills that basically for non-licensed practitioners who are not practicing medicine. I'm part of a group that's trying to get those bills passed everywhere, because the idea is to decriminalize the practice of herbalism and make it an informed consent thing, as long as you're not representing yourself as a doctor or doing drugs. And I know there's 14 states that it's pretty free with certain guidelines, but it does depend a lot on your state. Okay, this is a couple of questions I thought we ought to really address here. In today's economy, not everyone has a day job anymore. Any suggestions for folks who need a fast startup, or for finding capital, or for finding cheap ways to start up? And if you want to make some comments, I also have some suggestions on that too. So,
that is. Where can you find part-time work? I see so many, you know, my first strong emphasis is don't try to live on a credit card. which
advice.
I'm not doing. People be something that creates a really dreadful life situation for them. Find a job, any job, and it might not be what your heart desires, but make sure your bills are paid so that you can pursue your craft as an herbalist in a way that is not fear-based, and so you can make your business decisions in a way that's not motivated by fear or hunger or scarcity. What do you have to say, Stephen? I could ramble for a long time about that.
I was going to say, the fastest way I've ever started up anywhere I've gone is by actually trying to hold as many classes and speaking in every chance you get to anybody to promote yourself, to get yourself out there. It actually is better than advertising. And I had a friend who opened a shop down in Florida. And she started off building her business by offering a lunch lecture at the job she was working on health every month. You know, bring your sack lunch and listen to the health lecture. And she started building up a clientele that way. And then she started, you know, going to the local health food store, the local bookstore, saying, hey, I'd like to teach class on this, I'd like to teach class on that. And she got her name out there and built a customer base. I mean, that's the the key you're talking about is building a network of people that you know.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, doing a business plan is really, really important, and keeping it an ongoing evolution.
Yes.
And getting community colleges often have free business planning, not just workshops, but guidance and counseling. Now the, wherever I've lived in California, there's always been free small business counseling where you got up to 10 sessions. You know, that the starting point that you had to show up at the small business counseling was some semblance of a business plan, you know, to assess what goals are realistic, and that will help you accelerate the curve at which your practice develops. You know, I've seen, you know, it's raised my ire, but I've seen so many people do, in my networking, you know, people selling supplements, which I don't necessarily recommend if you want to be a clinician to start out in some multi-level marketing sales campaign. I think it's, you know, I think it's a bit trashy, even if the products are good. It will diminish your credibility as a differentially diagnosing practitioner, in my eyes, my humble eyes. And I've seen a lot of people out of the gates try to do things like lead cleanses, you know, and I've seen people with a month of training start a business leading cleanses that were, you know, here you're going to do 2 weeks on whole food diet, and, you know, not a supplement-based thing and not anything crazy, but really kind of sensible whole food-based cleanse. And they developed a really successful business, and, you know, it kind of pissed me off to see. So I was like, wait a sec, this person has a month of training in how to do a business like this, and, you know, are coming out of the gates with all this, you know, all this fire and inspiration, and people are jumping into it and doing it, and it's changing people's lives, you know, and I like to keep things like that as a reference point, you know, that there's nothing low integrity about it, you know, and if there's something like that, or body work, you know, it's, a lot of people who practice acupuncture are like, oh, I don't do body work anymore. You know, I'm an acupuncturist. And, well, you know, a lot of body workers, you know, do a relatively short course of training before they start. You know, laws are different all over the place before they start a practice. And, yeah, it's not – I see people who put themselves out, you know, with some business acumen and a little bit of skill, develop a practice more quickly than I see people develop practices as herbalists, even people who've worked as herbalists for a decade. Yeah. So what can you attach to your practice of herbalism that might be more widely accessible and might be something that you can fast track to that gets predictable, feel-good results really quickly that can still be high integrity? Yeah, I think that something like leading cleanses where you're creating an audience or doing body work, it's much more high integrity than kind of getting seduced by, you know, a multi-level ploy, which this kind of people fast-tracking that is, you know, as business. And I see seasoned practitioners get into that. I'm comfortable being openly critical about it.
yeah. Okay, since I work a lot with network marketing people. anyway.
It's just a perspective.
Yeah.
I think it can, my critique more is it will color community's perception of you as a clinician.
Well, it does. Yes, okay. There's one more question I think we ought to address here that I think is a really good one. I'm looking at studying online. Do you have a college you would recommend for herbalism? Haven't done any formal study. Passionate and a practicing iridologist. I'm a practicing iridologist too, which also AHT, a lot of people in AHT don't look very favorably on. But I know that the AHT website has a whole list of schools run by, you know, AHT professionals. Do you have any specific recommendations, Benjamin? for that person?
I don't have a, you know, if you look at, if you want to use the word college, that's, you know, that is, there's very few herbal colleges, you know, so again, this comes back to looking at what do you perceive your desired quality of life to be like and your level of professional strata. And a lot of people, I see, you know, a potential quicksand of going to, you see a lot of people who have toured a lot of herbal schools and, you know, done different herbal programs that have done three or four and are kind of frustrated. They're like, where do I go now? I think that it's never too early to engage a mentor in helping give you feedback about what schools to look at relative to your interests, relative to the styles that you are personally attracted to, relative to your geography. You know, if you want to do more bioregional herbalism, you know, there's a lot of great educators that are doing things related to where they live. So, you know, it depends on where you are in the country if you really want to learn botany. Yeah, but you might also feel really strongly like you want to get a good Western medical sciences background and training and some authority to treat illness, in which case my recommendations would be different. So find practitioners who, you know, take a survey of people who've gone through different pathways. You know, what I've done is fairly unique in that it was all apprenticeship-based and, you know, very little formal schooling, although there was always schools around to fulfill different components. I know and love educators at naturopathic schools, Chinese medical schools, you know, people running their own herbal educational trainings are all, you know, very passionate about what they're doing. And, you know, if you want to email me and ask for some more specific recommendations based on your interests, I'm really happy to field that. I like to make myself available to people's educational pursuits. So feel free to do that. I don't have a specific recommendation because there's too many to list that I think are wonderful.
Yeah, there's a lot of them listed on the AHG website, so a lot of different schools to consider. There are some people who've, you know, addressed some questions about health freedom and things that would be towards me. If you respond to me at the email address that the webinars go out from, the account webinars@treelight.com, that's an email that will get to me. So there's follow-up email from these webinars. There's also the invitations that go out. So just reply to me at webinars@treelight.com if you have any questions about those sorts of things. You've had some comments of some people who would love to indicate some kind of ongoing discussion about this topic. So maybe you can talk to AHG about it. I would love to be in on that kind of a discussion because I have a lot of ideas about business and networking. And I think a lot of people who are herbalists don't, you know, have a lot of understanding of business. And that's why it's very hard for them to get started and develop a business plan like you're talking about and know how to get their business rolling. So I think that could be a very valuable service for people. I think we should end the webinar because I have another one starting in 15 minutes. So
thank you, everybody, for joining us. And I really hope this inspires you and gives you some insight and direction and gets you one step closer to kind of fulfilling what it is that you aspire to do and, you know, a few steps closer to helping more people connect with plants.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Benjamin, for sharing all of your insight and ideas with us. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. And again, the webinar has been recorded, and we will be posting it on the AHG website. Good night.
Thanks, Steve. Good night.
Thanks.